Hey, tailgaters! Ross of the Pigskin Tales Podcast here. Feel that summer heat? It's not just the sun, it's the thrill of upcoming college football season, stoking the coals. So get ready for the season. Dive into the history books with Homefield, the premium collegiate apparel brand from Indianapolis. Homefield crafts incredibly comfortable gear designed with iconic vintage nods over 150 colleges. A library of history right on your chest. Homefield is the Indiana Jones of collegiate apparel, uncovering hidden gems from school archives. Unique mascots, logos, and even unforgettable moments frozen in time. Visit homefieldapparel.com and shop the archives. Homefield Apparel, where comfort, nostalgia, and the spirit of college football history unite. Again, that's homefieldapparel.com.
According to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Hall of Famer Red Badgrove once said, "A dollar was a dollar in those days, and ball players weren't worrying about money. They were worrying about the game. We were all grateful to have a job. Those were the days in early football when players played for love of the game." Learn more about Red Badgrove on his birthday for this December 1st edition of the Football History Headlines, as well as we'll talk about Marino reaching another NFL milestone. More Heisman winners are announced, and we start seeing conference championship game results. It's all coming up in just a moment. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of the PigskinDispatch.com website, and we have a December 1st football history headlines coming up today. And just like November, the beginning of December is a very busy time in football history, and we've got a lot of headlines to cover, a lot of Hall of Famers to talk about, and let's not waste any more time. Let's get right at it as we start off our football history headlines on December 1st, 1923 at Varsity Stadium in Toronto. The Queen's University keeps their Grey Cup title with a 54-0 win over Regina Rugby Club. According to the CFL.ca website, this is the largest margin of victory ever in a Grey Cup game. December 21st, 1928, at a Triple-A grounds in Hamilton, the boys at the 99yards.com set us straight on this 16th Grey Cup game as they let us know that the Hamilton Tigers won their third cup by a 30-0 shutout of the Regina Rough Riders. And we have another special edition today with Chris Lawton on our website of pigskindispatch.com, where Chris goes over most of these Grey Cup games from December 1st in his own writing style, and he's the expert on these Grey Cup games, so make sure you check out that article. And we sure appreciate Chris Lawton sharing his expertise with us on pigskindispatch.com, and we hope you enjoy it. December 31st, 1936, the second Heisman Trophy ever is awarded to Yale's brilliant end, Larry Kelly. Actually, according to Heisman.com, the trophy given to Kelly was the first one to bear the name of the Heisman Memorial Trophy. The initial 1935 award was called the Downtown Athletic Club Trophy. Another first in this case was that Larry Kelly was the first time an award went to a pass-catching end. The 1936 season for the 6'1" end was remarkable as he caught 17 passes for 372 yards and 15 scores, while on defense he had one interception. December 1st, 1945, at Varsity Stadium in Toronto, the Toronto Argonauts took home their sixth title with a 35-0 shutout of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the 33rd Grey Cup Championship game, according to TheStar.com. December 1st, 1951, the 17th Heisman Trophy Award went to Dick Kizmier, Princeton halfback. Dick led all players in the nation in total offense in 1951 with his gaudy 827 yards, 22 touchdowns, and an incredible 626 passing percentage. After the incredible 1951 season, the United Press named him Player of the Year, and Kizmier also won the Maxwell Trophy. Dick Kizmier was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1966. December 1st, 1956 at Legion Field in Birmingham. At the 21st Iron Bowl Classic, it was those Auburn Tigers who won as they outscored the Crimson Tide of Alabama 34-7. December 1st, 1959, the 25th Heisman Trophy Award belonged to halfback Billy Cannon of LSU. If the name rings a bell, it's because we just talked about him yesterday on the November 30th History Headlines when he was the first pick in the 1959 NFL Draft. What a two-day span it was in his young life. Heisman.com informs us that Billy had rare size and speed. He can consistently run the 100-yard dash in 9.5 seconds flat, and at 6'1", 210 pounds, he had the size to run over defenders as well as run past them. Cannon was a big part of the 1959 national champion LSU Tigers' success. Bill ended up playing professionally in the AFL with the Oilers, Raiders, and in the NFL with the Chiefs. December 1st, 1962, at Legion Field in Birmingham, the 27th Iron Bowl took place, and this time, once again, it was the Alabama 11 that blanked Auburn 38-0 for their fourth straight shutout of the Tigers in the series, according to the OnTheStay.com website. Now we're happy to bring back the famous Oz Davis to present the 1962 Grey Cup game in his own words. As you remember, Oz Davis is the host of the Truly the Goats podcast, found on your sportshistorynetwork.com. Let's pass the podcast over to Oz for a few moments.
On this day in 1962, the Canadian Football League celebrated the playing of the 50th Grey Cup Championship with a game that ultimately took nearly 25 hours to complete. The game, now known as the Fog Bowl, featured a fitting matchup between the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Hamilton Tiger Cats, who'd played each other in four of the previous five Grey Cups, and the previous season had played to the first overtime game in Grey Cup history. This Grey Cup was also the first ever to be shown on American network television as part of an episode of ABC's Wide World of Sports. Conditions at kickoff time were more or less normal, but if fog can roll in with a vengeance, it certainly did into Toronto's exhibition stadium. By the second quarter, the fog had swamped the stadium. By the fourth quarter, visibility was down to literally 1 foot or so. With about 9:45 remaining in the game, league officials decided to suspend play with the score Winnipeg 28, Hamilton 27, until the following afternoon. When play resumed, neither team had much success moving the ball, and the final score remained 28-27. Angelo Mosca, the all-time great CFL defensive lineman and veteran of nine Grey Cup games, later admitted in his autobiography, Tell Me to My Face, that he and several of his teammates partied on the Saturday night between games as though they'd already won. Hey, preparations had been made, right? The entire game is available for watching on YouTube. Be sure and check it out. And check out my podcast, Truly the Goats, the sports history podcast with a sense of perspective, right here on the Sports History Network.
Thanks, Oz. That was a brilliant perspective, as always. Now we'll go back to our football history headlines, and we'll go with December 1st, 1973. And per the OnThisDay.com website, the 38th Iron Bowl might sound like a broken record, but the fact is that Alabama beat Auburn with another shutout victory, and this time it was 35-0 in Birmingham. December 1st, 1979. We had a great matchup in the 44th Iron Bowl. Alabama's Crimson Tide outlasted the Tigers of Auburn 25-18 at Old Legion Field in Birmingham. December 1st, 1980. The website Heisman.com informs us that the 1980 award of the 46th Heisman Memorial Trophy belonged to South Carolina's George Rogers. The big running back had a remarkable season as he ran for the nation's best 1,781 yards while punching in 14 touchdowns. In the 1981 NFL Draft, he was the top overall pick by the draft by the New Orleans Saints. He also played with the Washington Redskins in the NFL and even won a Super Bowl with that team. December 1st, 1984, we had another Heisman Trophy awarded. This time it was Boston College quarterback Doug Flutie was announced as the Heisman Trophy winner, per the Heisman.com website. Some say he was too undersized to be successful, but he proved them all wrong, as he not only won the coveted award, but became the first career college passer to eclipse the 10,000-yard mark in college. As a matter of fact, the season prior in 1983, Flutie was third in voting to win the Heisman. His senior season, though, he would not be denied the award as he passed for 3,454 yards and 27 touchdowns. Doug Flutie went on to have a great professional career in both the CFL and the NFL for multiple teams. December 1st, 1984, at Legion Field in Birmingham, Alabama, the 49th Iron Bowl will unfortunately always be remembered for a snafu from one of the great star players as much as it was for the great sports spectacle that was played on the field. In the 1982 Iron Bowl, Bo Jackson was the hero as he went over the top for the winning score. Bo in 1984 was not so much the game's hero. According to AL.com, with 3:27 left to play and Auburn trailing 17-15, the ball went to running back Brett Fullwood on that fourth and goal play from the one. Jackson, who misheard the call, ran left while the rest of the play went right. Without a lead blocker, Fullwood was run out of bounds by an Alabama defender short of the goal line. The Tide held on to win as the final score was Alabama 17, Auburn 15, and the game has long been remembered as Wrong Way Bo. December 1st, 1990, the 56th winner of the Heisman Trophy Award was Ty Detmer, the great quarterback from Brigham Young University. His 15,031 career passing yards and 121 touchdowns show he was one of the best college quarterbacks ever. As a matter of fact, he is one of the most decorated quarterbacks in college football history. The website bio from footballfoundation.org states that he won a Heisman Trophy, a Maxwell Award, two Davy O'Brien Awards, and at one time held 59 NCAA records. The National Football Foundation selected Ty Detmer to enter their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2012. Ty was a late selection in the 1992 NFL draft by the Green Bay Packers, and in the NFL, he played a total of 14 seasons with the Packers, Philadelphia Eagles, San Francisco 49ers, Cleveland Browns, Detroit Lions, and those Atlanta Falcons. December 1st, 1990, at Legion Field in Birmingham, the 55th Iron Bowl was one of the more memorable ones. The Tigers had entered this game claiming victory in the four previous contests against Alabama on the gridiron. Top moments in this game, according to SI.com, were Tide kicker Philip Doyle booting three field goals and the Alabama offense rolling the dice and going for it on fourth and one from midfield. It was a tight game, so those plays mattered when both defenses were playing so well. Alabama outlasted Auburn 16-7 for the end of the Tigers' winning streak against them. December 1st, 1991, at John Roby Stadium in Miami, Florida, Dolphins legendary quarterback Dan Marino set an NFL record when he made it to 3,000 yards passing in a season for the eighth time in his career, according to the Dolphins.com website. The Dolphins won 33-14 over the visiting Tampa Bay Buccaneers. December 1st, 2000, the National Football League selected veteran official Mike Pereira as the director of officiating of the league. Mike stepped away from his duties at NFL headquarters in 2010, and since then, he has been with the NFL on Fox, expert of all things officiating. Now, how about we talk about some conference championships, and we'll start off December 1st, 2007. The 16th SEC Championship game had the number 5 LSU versus number 14 Tennessee. This is a great matchup of ranked teams in the country playing for the SEC title. Who could have asked for more? ESPN.com has a great story on the game and describes the turning point for LSU was when Jonathan Zenon picked off a pass and took it 18 yards for a touchdown with 9:54 left in the game to rally LSU from a 14-13 deficit. The play was the difference and the Tigers knocked off the Vols 21-14. That very same day, we had the ACC Championship game. It was the third in the history, and it was another great game on the bill as number 6 Virginia Tech faced number 12 Boston College. The American Football Database gives us the insight that at the half, the two teams battled to a 16-16 tie. At the halftime, adjustments were just what the Hokies needed as they came out of the locker room and not only shut down the Eagles' offense, but put two additional scores of their own on the board. Final score was 30-16 in favor of Virginia Tech. And just when those two games got done, another game on December 1st, 2007 for a conference championship. It was the Big 12 championship, the 12th in history, and it was the top-billed game of the day as the conference championships go, as the number 9 Oklahoma Sooners took on the number 1 in the nation, Missouri. Rock'emNation.com has the details on this game that had the Sooners upsetting Mizzou 38-17. What a day for college football. Okay, December 1st, 2007 was a pretty good day for conference championships. But what about December 1st, 2012? Well, in that day, we had number 2 Alabama faced off against number 3 Georgia in the 2012 SEC Championship game, which was the 21st one held for that conference. According to SBNation.com, the game came down to the last seconds as the Bulldogs caught a tip pass inbounds at about the 5-yard line but couldn't stop the clock. Had the receiver not caught the tip pass, they probably would have had one more play. Hindsight's always 20/20, and heck, when a wideout sees a catchable ball, he tries to catch it, and that's what he did. The Tide rolled to a 32-28 win for a chance at the national championship. And that they did, as Alabama blanked their longtime rivals LSU 21-0 to win it all a few weeks later after getting past this late Georgia scare. Now it's time to talk about some Hall of Fame birthdays for this December 1st. And this first player we spoke about very beginning of the podcast when we quoted him from the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website. Well, he was born on December 1st, 1902, in Ordelia, Washington. Morris Red Badgrow, the legendary USC end, arrived on the scene for this life. Red was known as his sure tackling, solid blocking, and sure hands at USC, and a couple of options after school was over because, according to his bio, the Pro Football Hall of Fame's website, Red was a 3-sport star for the USC Trojans. You see, Badgrow was also a talented baseball player as well, and he teetered back and forth as to which sport he should play professionally. First stop was football, as he played with Red Grange on the New York Yankees football team. After one season on the gridiron, he played a couple years on the diamond with the baseball's St. Louis Browns. His love for football was too much, though, as the 1930 season saw him back in pads playing for the New York Football Giants. His contributions on offense and defense were significant to some big Giants victories, including a key block punt against the Boston Redskins in 1935 that he took in for a touchdown. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Red Badgrow in the year 1991. December 1st, 1931, from Sheffield, Pennsylvania, Steve Eisenhower, great tackle slash guard for the U.S. Naval Academy, was born. The bio on his great player on footballfoundation.org tells us that the National Football Foundation selected Steve Eisenhower to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1994. December 1st, 1938, from Washington, D.C., the legendary Duke University guard Mike McGee came into this life. The voters of the NFF selected Mike McGee to be inducted into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1990. December 1st, 1971, Atlanta, Georgia. Rob Waldrop, the defensive tackle from the University of Arizona, was born. National Football Foundation selected Rob Waldrop to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2011. We hope you enjoyed the podcast for today, and we hope you tune in tomorrow, where we will talk about the first leather helmet is used, the 1985 Bears coach has almost come to blows mid-game, and we remember a game called the Run in the Mud at the old Iron Bowl. Special thanks to Oz Davis, Mike Monroe, and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for all that they've done to contribute to the podcast today. So tune in tomorrow for the December 2nd football history headlines. By subscribing to this podcast right now, checking it out on your podcast provider, or going to pigskindispatch.com or sportshistorynetwork.com to get all the action, as well as see many more great podcasts, just like Oz Davis's Truly the Goats podcast, or many of our other great sports history podcasts that you can enjoy. Oh, and don't forget, check out Chris Lawton's special blog post on pigskindispatch.com today for the great CFL action that he covers. So till tomorrow, everybody, let's have a great football day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, Sports History fan.
This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the Official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the Official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.